Hi, Craig Wilson here, and welcome to Season 4 of the Making the Media podcast. It's great to be back, and we are so grateful to have you join us. If you are a new listener, then welcome in. And if you're a long-time listener, thanks so much for coming back for more. To kick off the season, I guess there's only one subject we could focus on, and that is artificial intelligence. It was all over the IBC trade show in Amsterdam. It is one of the hot topics of conversation within the creative community and is fast moving, with new developments seemingly being announced on an almost daily basis. To help us navigate through the current situation, our first guest of the new season is Laura Ellis from the BBC in the UK. Laura is their head of technology forecasting, working as part of the BBC's R&D department. A journalist for many years with the BBC, in her current role, she focuses on ensuring they're best placed to take advantage of emerging technologies and takes a particular interest in ethics, personalised and automated journalism, machine learning, generative AI, AI in content production and analysis. We talk about all of that, but I began by asking Laura to outline the work of BBC R&D.
We go back nearly as long as the BBC. We go back to nearly 100 years now, which is incredible. And we've been behind some of the big developments that the BBC has been a part of. So colour TV, the development of radio in the first instance. You know, the BBC started as this organisation looking at how you provided content for this new wireless thing. So being a sort of at the heart of all those developments, and just very, very much keeping a public service focus on making sure that as technology emerges and develops, and it's been doing that very quickly lately, the BBC is there to make sure that we're out in the industry talking to other people like yourselves about, you know, how we can best serve the public, how are the standards that we all use applied, how do we work together collaboratively on those things like bandwidth, all those kind of conversations. And then how we build, adapt and adopt the technology that that we need to make the organisation a success. So it's a really, I think of the BBC as a technology organisation very much as well as a content one, which is, as you say, not necessarily the way some people would consider it. But I think it's a massively important part of what we do. And I'm really proud to be part of an organisation. We won an Emmy again last week that has this, you know, this very rich technology history as well as a really proud history of creating content.
And so what is the remit of the department and the sort of day-to-day work that you're involved in?
So R&D is involved in just a whole slew of projects, and they might go from the sort of things that probably not many people will ever see much below the surface of. So things about, you know, how we do our distribution, how we create our infrastructure, how we make sure that what we have in the BBC that maintains all our systems works, continues to work, is safe, secure, all those sort of things. So that's a big part of it. On top of that, there are the more sort of public and audience facing things. So we have a lot of partnerships with organizations and universities, for example, where perhaps we're looking at how we take on technology. So we have one of the partnerships we have is looking at virtual production, just to give you one example, and how that might affect the media industry. So there's lots of knock-ons from that, you know, sustainability knock-ons. There are all kinds of interesting things that we could do creatively with it. So there's all that sort of thing. And then there's a lot of work around just how we format our content, how we make our content more flexible so that we can deliver over the internet in a more flexible way, because that's going to be a real feature of the next few years, isn't it? It's going to be, you know, how we with this new ability to deliver more personalized services, how we make the most of that and give people through the huge mass of content that we all provide, not just the BBC, but others, how we provide that in a more modular way and perhaps more targeted way. So lots of work going on around personalization, and then, of course, AI. A large amount of work going on about how you both provide production tools for our journalists and our content makers through AI and through other means. And also how you then use AI to give audiences new experiences. And that's something which I know we'll come on to, but is a really exciting part of what we do. And I'll give you just a quick example of that. So on our Spring Watch programs, Spring Watch, Autumn Watch, Winter Watch, the Watches, very, very popular natural history programs, we use AI to use machine learning to look at film. I couldn't call it film because I'm very old, but to look at video and to spot things happening. And it's trained to spot, you know, particular things happening in this video that we shoot, which we might have, you know, from, I don't know, 10, 20 nests or burrows or, you know, bits of landscape where wildlife is doing its thing. And then we can use that to help producers not have to spend ages scrolling through and looking for, you know, oh, where's that squirrel? Where's it appeared? You know, we can find that squirrel for you very quickly. And it's given us really interesting insights into animal behavior, because machine learning, if it's good at anything, it's good at really chunking down masses of content and going, right, you know, the stuff that you need is here and here. And so that's been a really fascinating thing to see unfold.
So you talked about there, ironically, about personalization. And personalization is something, again, that something like AI is one of the areas that can take advantage of. And one of the things, I guess, about personalization is it is about, I guess, in some way, showing the value of the BBC to the audience, because it's recognizing the areas that they're interested in and then delivering content to them that's interesting in as well. A lot of stuff that's talked about AI just now is it a threat? Is it an opportunity? Is it benign? Is it something that we need to be kind of worried about? So how do you balance all of that when you're looking at how AI can be implemented across the BBC?
It's such a great question. So one of the things that you have to do is understand it, and you have to understand where the threats exist and how you might mitigate them. So everything we do is underpinned by a notion of safety, you know, safe use of this technology. And by safe, I mean everything from making sure we're not reinforcing biases or unhelpfully creating, for example, when you talk about personalization, there was always a big worry about echo chambers and people just being pushed down to content that might be more and more kind of extreme or you know, less expansive. And there are those dangers. So how do you mitigate against those? We've had things like our machine learning engine principles that we built 3 or 4 years ago, which are specifically designed to make sure that we analyze that sort of thing and that we adjust our work accordingly as appropriate. But, you know, there are other safety considerations. And, you know, particularly as we go into the era of generative AI, we all know that there are hallucinations, as they call them, which I think is a great term, or perhaps not such a great term. But in other words, you know, that the ability for these new kinds of still fairly new kinds of AI to cause us problems in terms of being inaccurate. And as a journalist, the very, very last thing you want is anything that's going to make you or assist you in being inaccurate. You really don't want that. So that's one of the key issues that I think we have to keep a really close eye on. So a lot of the work we do is not just about the AI itself, but it's about it's the way it's contextualized in society. So how do we make it safe? How do we talk to the members of our audience about what they want, you know, and how they understand it and help them to understand it? And the BBC does a lot of brilliant editorial on that, as you've probably seen. But I think there's an R&D responsibility as well. So we do speak at things, we talk to groups of people, everybody from sort of schools to industry bodies to other organisations about how to make sure we're having a public conversation about this really powerful, I'm going to say not new technology, but this very powerful growing and developing technology that we have in front of us.
Yeah, it's a very good point that it isn't new, but there is rapid change and rapid growth that we've seen. And I think also a rapid awareness within the wider public because of ChatGPT-3 that's come out in the last year or so. And a lot of people being a lot more interested in seeing what potential it has. I think one of the phrases that you talked about there was about the safe use of it. And I know there's another phrase that's been used, which is something like good hygiene. So what does good hygiene mean if you're working as a journalist where you have all of this emerging technology around you?
I think one of the things that it means is actually understanding it. And there's a bit of a myth that goes around that journalists don't like technology. And I do understand how that comes about. And it comes about because journalists are amazingly busy and deadline driven. And having been one, the very last thing you want to do when you're right up against it is to be thinking about, you know, here's a new thing that I might want to take on board in the next, you know, 6 or 7 months. You're quite often just very focused on a day job. So I think it's really important to have both journalists who are kind of comfortable with technology, but also specific roles that we create in our newsrooms that allow people to have the space and time to understand the technology and then to impart that information to other people in the newsroom as necessary. So we used to have a great role called a development producer, and they would look at new technology and innovation, and they would say, right, that's going to fit into this shift here. No one else can do that. You know, you can't have the technologists. They're not going to know how that's going to, you know, dovetail into the social media shift at 8:30 in the morning or whatever, but the development producer does. And I think having those kind of hybrid roles, those kind of people who sit at the axis of technology and journalism, I would say this, but I think they're really important. And I think trying to kind of make that bridge happen helps everybody. It helps the technologist to understand the journalism, and it helps the journalist to understand what's coming and how they might use it to enhance their work, or how they might protect themselves against some of the depredations that, you know, that we worry about, some of the things that, you know, perhaps aren't so good about technology, because we know that not everything is.
One of the concepts that's talked a little bit just now, particularly when it comes to the use of AI in the creative industries, not necessarily within just within journalism, is this sort of co-pilot concept, where you have AI which is assisting the journalist or the editor to actually to do their work. Is that how you would see AI potentially being implemented in certain aspects of the BBC?
It's a possibility. So I think we talk a lot about the human in the loop, and I think that for me is the absolutely key is the key concept. So I've spoken to a lot of journalists since generative AI started to appear on the scene, and we talk quite a lot about, would you ever send anything to your audience unmediated that generative AI has created? And the answer for the vast majority, not all, but the vast majority of journalists is absolutely not. You know, we will have somebody reading that stuff. Now, when it comes to going back a stage in the production process, so let's say you're an investigative journalist and you know absolutely nothing about the thing you're about to investigate, you know, could you use generative AI, for example, to give you some hints about how I might explore, you know, the issue of blood diamonds or the issue of ivory poaching or something along those lines? And the answer is you absolutely can. But you just need to be very careful that you're interrogating those results. So they might push you in a direction which is very useful, and then you find out that once you do some human investigation, that was something you might not have known about, but is now an incredibly useful dimension to your investigation. Or you might find that generative AI has led you up a completely wrong garden path, you know, with nothing at the end of it. But you have to have that intelligibility or intelligence applied to it, I think, to make sure that you're not just going, right, I've given it, you know, it's written me a 400 word thing. I'm just going to, you know, that's not journalism. And I think, to be a little bit pretentious for a minute, I do think there's something about the soul of journalism that we need to protect in all this. So for me, one of the most beautiful, is probably a weird way of describing it, one of the most important things about journalism is a human experiencing something and telling another human about it, or a group of humans about it. And I think AI will, I don't see, you know, in my lifetime, AI being able to replicate that, and it probably shouldn't. And so I think we need to make sure we protect that. So wherever we're using AI, it should be to help and enhance and give us those superpowers about interrogating vast amounts of data. But we must always make sure that, you know, the relationship with the audience is hugely important. It's the most important thing, and the trust that we have. And I think making sure that we never breach that by doing anything irresponsible with the sort of generative material we're seeing is massively, massively important.
So you mentioned, you know, generative AI there. And I think one of the things about it is about the pace of change. You know, there's so much has come out in the last sort of 6 months or so, with the likes of Midjourney or DALL-E and others that are available as well. Is it significant for the BBC to assess the potential of these kind of developments, but with still that backstop in, we're actually going to do this for an assessment perspective, as opposed to we're going to implement this in certain things that we do?
I think it's really important to look at, you know, where the potential harms are and where the potential creative use cases are and what harms might be associated with them, or what detriment, not necessarily harms, but what, you know, what the consequences might be. So I think we should absolutely have the fullest conversation possible. And we're incredibly fortunate in R&D, because we have an AI research team who are the experts, you know, so you can go to them and say, this hallucinations thing, you know, if we did this, what would happen? Or what's going to be the long-term outcome of, you know, these particular developments or discussions? And they will tell us. So that's one of the great things about having an R&D team. It's having that expertise in-house. We are incredibly fortunate. We know we are. We use it absolutely, you know, to the benefit of the public in every way possible. So I do think there will be uncomfortable discussions, because, you know, some of the things we might consider, people might not like the look of. And, you know, I'll draw your attention to a couple of, you know, really good recent examples. We put some AI generated synthetic faces onto contributors in a program the other day. It was done for a really good reason. It was done for anonymity reasons, where normally you have a blur or a pixelation of a face. And these faces were deep faked on so that people could see the emotion and they could see human beings and they could relate more easily to the story, which was about Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was a really good use of that technology, a really good use of it. But that team spent ages going, is this right? Should we be doing this? What do we think about it? You know, what are the issues? And, you know, we're assisted by great conversations that are being had by things like the Partnership on AI, who have created their own kind of guidance that the BBC contributed to on the use of synthetic media. But it's still very new to us all. You know, we need to kind of have these conversations, and we need to have them within our organisations and externally as well. So I think, you know, those sort of things will be a hallmark over the next few months. Some of them will be uncomfortable and difficult. And actually, if we're not having difficult conversations, we're probably doing something wrong.
I guess there's two senses there. One is obviously the editorial decision making around that. But I guess the other side of that is making the audience aware that perhaps the AI has been utilised in certain aspects of a programme. So I presume that's something that the BBC also has to consider.
Yeah, disclosure is a really big theme. So how do you disclose your use of synthetic media in this instance? One of the things that we did with this particular programme, which I absolutely loved, was not only disclose it right at the beginning, we have, you know, describe in the script, we have done this, but actually get one of the interviewees to refer to. I don't think we actually got them to, I think they just did. You know, you can see that this is not my real face, but my real face doesn't matter. What matters is the story I have to tell. And it was so beautifully kind of seamless. Where it's much more tricky is things like voice. How do you flag up and disclose the use of a synthetic voice? And we, you know, some research we've done shows that our audience are not that bothered. If you've got a weather forecast, which we do, we have 3,000 synthetically voiced weather forecasts that go out on our app every day, four times a day. You couldn't get a human to voice that. It would be a nonsense. Our synthetic voice does a very good job of it. But when we tested it with audiences, they were like, yeah, we kind of get that's probably a synthetic voice. We don't need you to go, and this is a synthetic voice, you know, telling you this. However, where you're interacting, perhaps, you know, through a sort of a chatbot type of thing with a synthetic voice, or where a synthetic voice is delivering, say, a news bulletin, people do feel more strongly about that. So it's a really interesting one, the balance between not making things intrusive, but making sure that you're being upfront and honest with your audience about the work that you're doing.
I mean, a really good point that you made there, Laura, was about that, you know, there's more than 3,000 weather forecasts. I think also when you look at things like election results, where there are hundreds of results that are coming in, that having some kind of AI service that can take that information, contextualize it, and then produce a short summary of it as well. These are elements that I guess have been happening for some time within the BBC and other organizations of taking advantage of AI for that. Are there specific elements of AI that are your major area of focus today?
So there's quite a lot. I mean, everybody's focused on, I just want to make the point very quickly, by the way, that I think one of the things, the real benefits of that is accessibility. So you're giving accessibility, you know, through that, the use of that synthetic media technology to people who might not be able to access those forecasts otherwise. So the focus that, you know, we currently have is, like a lot of other people, we're looking at the potential of these large language models, you know, that have come out, and working out, you know, what is the best way for us to react to those. So you'll be aware, organizations are either building their own, very unusual. We know that Bloomberg have done that, for example, or they're looking at how they take a model from somewhere, that it might be a GPT model. It might be, it might be from OpenAI. It might be something from Meta, the sort of the Llama model, the open source things that have come. And they're turning them to their own purposes, whatever those purposes might be. And I think we're still at the point where, as journalistic organizations, we are trying to understand the best usage of these, the most economical usage of these, because obviously there are sort of cost considerations for everybody, and how we might partner. So there's a whole, you know, issue around partnerships, which we are starting to see bear fruit. So I think, you know, one of the most interesting ones is a recent partnership with a journalistic organization with OpenAI, and they've kind of done a deal which involves, I think, technology. I mean, there's some financials in there, I imagine, as well, but technology being exchanged for data, effectively. I think lots of organizations are going to have to start thinking about the price they put, and that's a very crude way of putting it, but on their data. And not least because one of the factors, as we all know, of the kind of Gen AI explosion has been the kind of notion of everybody's material being scraped off the internet and us not really having really much of an option in that. And some people, and we've seen, you know, countless, well, not countless, but we've seen quite a few legal cases ensue, and they're all absolutely currently happening around the legality of that. And, you know, people are sort of demonstrating various levels of comfort with it. I think, you know, most recently, the New York Times has launched a court case. There is concern, I think, in the industry about where we take this and the extent to which it is acceptable use to kind of just, you know, suck in an enormous amount of content that has been created in some cases, you know, which has immense commercial, potential commercial benefit for an organization. So I think we're going to be keeping the lawyers very busy for several years on these discussions. And what will be very interesting is seeing how they pan out globally, because again, very, very interesting with something as global as the internet, you know, to sort of to try and have different areas, you know, doing different things and, you know, people jurisdiction shopping to see where they can best do the thing they want to do is a really kind of uncomfortable thing that we, you know, I really hope we don't have to face up to. I really hope we do manage somehow as an industry and as a society to get some decent global regulation in place, because that would be hugely helpful.
One of the things you mentioned earlier on, Laura, was about partnership. And there's a couple of questions I wanted to ask around that. Is one is obviously the BBC within Europe as part of the European Broadcasting Union, which is obviously a framework for all, not just public service broadcasters, but primarily public service broadcasters within the European region. How do you work with the EBU looking at AI? Because this isn't, as you mentioned there, it's a global issue. So what's the sense within the EBU of what AI is going to mean?
So the EBU are a glorious organisation to work with, and they've put out some really interesting thinking about the use of AI in public media, in public service media. And that's unlocked lots of conversations, both kind of conversations that we have sort of collectively and formally, you know, with other EBU partners, but also kind of, you know, one-on-ones that we have with areas that, you know, that with organisations that are particularly interested in certain aspects of it. So the EBU is, as ever, a really strong convening force on this, and it's really helpful to have that. There are other organisations as well that, you know, are doing great things in terms of doing some thinking about this and coming up with some suggested guidelines. So we have UNESCO guidelines now, we have the OECD doing some really, really solid work. I already mentioned the partnership on AI, who've been, you know, real prime movers in pushing the conversation forward. But not only that, actually coming up with a framework, you know, that people can sign up to. And that actually feels like quite a brave thing to do at the moment, because it is difficult. And these conversations, you know, will always be tricky, in as much as commercial organizations have every right to want to make money, right, out of things. Public service organizations that are structured differently will always have a slightly different approach. But what we all want is to work together to make sure that, you know, we use this technology ethically, safely, effectively, and creatively. And there are many ways in which we can absolutely comfortably work collaboratively on that. So I think for me, one of the great things to come out of this whole AI era is a much closer collaboration between organizations who've traditionally been quite, you know, have had rivalry and still do have rivalry on, you know, on their journalism, but are collecting together to talk about sharing their insights into how this technology is going to affect us. And I think that's a huge positive.
One other area that we've actually focused on the podcast before is the work of an organization called Project Origin, which again, I know is something that the BBC are involved in. We've talked about generative AI. Project Origin, for people who don't know, listen to the podcast with Bruce McCormack and he can tell you all about it. But it is about content authenticity. And how important of an aspect do you think that is, given everything else that's going on at the moment, about the concerns people have about AI, fake news, and what's being created?
I'm glad you mentioned it, because I do think it's really important. And, you know, Project Origin is designed to provide a kind of piece of assistance, you know, in the news industry to help you to detect whether the content that you're looking at and that you've chosen to trust comes from where you think it has come from. With generative AI on the scene, there are kind of two main things. One is the obligation for organizations to actually signal that content they've made is synthetic or is generated. And so this disclosure issue that we've talked about. And there are sort of regulatory moves being made, as you've probably seen in many jurisdictions, looking at how we might want to approach that and how organizations might be obliged to declare and how they might be obliged to declare whether content is synthetic. Now, that's assuming you're a good actor and that you're kind of, you know, subject to a regulatory regime. Where bad actors are kind of involved and are creating synthetic content for the sake of harm, potentially, you are in a different situation. You're then in the situation where you're trying to detect, you know, synthetic content. And I think, you know, one of the conversations I'm having at the moment is, you know, where are we with deepfake detection? Because we tried it about 3 or 4 years ago, and it felt like a very inexact science. Intel have come up with some recent work, which I think has made it better, and I'm still kind of looking into that. And there are other kind of moves to kind of make sure that, you know, there is an ability to the extent that we can to detect deepfakes. So I think you've got the kind of disclosure and you've got the detection, and together, you know, those two things will determine the extent to which we can work out whether something that we're seeing is actually real, or to what extent it's real, because a lot of content will be mixed. So there'll be stuff that, you know, has synthetic elements to it, and there'll be things that are kind of completely synthesized, and there'll be many degrees, you know, within that. So are you synthesizing from a real individual, or are you creating a whole, you know, a whole new digital human? All those questions are things that I think one of the things we really need as an industry is a taxonomy for it. Because we've all sort of defined it in slightly different ways in the past, and we're working towards, again, just having a kind of a coherent view of how you describe synthetic media, deepfakes, AI, Gen AI, and all that kind of thing. And we've been drawing diagrams, Venn diagrams, my favorite thing, on it. So yeah, it's a really interesting ongoing discussion.
Yeah, one phrase that I like to think about things at the moment is, I think AI is about concerned excitement. Because I think a lot of people are very excited by what it potentially could mean for the industry, but there is a great deal of concern about equally what it means for the industry and obviously what it means for the audience as well. How would you sum up, you know, where we are today? Because it is such a fast-moving, fast-changing thing.
We're all feeling a bit bowled along in the kind of incredible pace of change. You know, the dramatic things that happen every week are the sort of things that we might have expected to happen in terms of sheer technology, you know, emerging technology excitement, maybe every year or couple of years. And it didn't start with ChatGPT. It started quite a long time before that, but ChatGPT was an inflection point where everything just went woof, technical term. And I think, you know, I think it will slow down. I think we will have a kind of a plateauing of the Gen AI stuff, but what we'll be left with, there's still some very chunky decisions about, you know, how we partner, how we use it, how we develop it, and how we communicate it. So I'm looking forward to that plateauing. It might be wrong and it might never happen, but I think it will. But I think at the moment, I would sum up by saying there has never been a more exciting time to be in technology. I'm very grateful to be here. I wish I was a bit younger, because I'd like to kind of see it out for a few more decades, which it probably isn't going to happen. And I just think, let's keep talking. Let's keep talking. Organizations involved in this space need to keep the conversations going, because it's really important. The decisions we make now will shape an awful lot of stuff, which will be very consequential for future generations. I think it's that important.
Laura, it's really fascinating to speak to you. There's a question I've asked everyone who's ever been on the podcast, so I will ask you as a final comment, which is, what is it, if anything, that keeps you up at night?
I think if anything keeps me up at night, and nothing really does, because I'm so exhausted by all this that I sleep like a baby. But if anything keeps me up at night, it's the sense that somehow we'll fluff this opportunity, and that we'll mess up and we'll leave consequences for our children and our grandchildren from not doing the right things and making the right decisions collectively. And we have such a brilliant opportunity to do that now. And it could be such a wonderful new technology in everything from education to journalism to, well, you know, beyond the, our fields into health and climate change and everything else. Please let us make good decisions and collect together on a global basis to do that is what I kind of think all the time. And it's that falling apart that keeps me awake, if anything.
Fascinating insights from Laura, and a topic we will undoubtedly revisit through this season. Check out the show notes for more information about the work which Avid is doing in the AI space, including recent developments in Media Composer and Media Central. And you can also find links there to an earlier episode about AI and journalism with Charlie Beckett from the LSE in London. What do you think about what Laura had to say? Get in touch on social through any of the Avid channels, or on X, formerly known as Twitter, and Instagram, I am Craig, AW1969. You can also email us. We are makingthemedia@avid.com. That's all from this first episode of Season 4, none of which was written or created using any AI. Thanks to Laura for sharing her views. Thanks to our producer, Matt Diggs. And most of all, thanks to you for listening. Join us next time for more of the people making the media.